Hey everybody, and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future. Yes, absolutely, it is what you've become to know and love. And every week I get joined by one of the wonderful team, and I've got JC with me today. JC, good morning and welcome.
Hello mate, I'm only here because you mentioned takeaway.
yes, we'll feed you later.
Or is it something anyway to do with our guest? Maybe.
Oh, maybe. We'll see. He's trying to be cute and clever now. Never a good fit for our JC. Anyway, moving along. So every week, you know that we get to talk to some great, great people. Innovators, pioneers, collaborators. And today is no exception. We have a real pioneer and an innovator and a collaborator in the world of trucks in particular, and that is Chris Welsh from Welsh's Transport. Chris, welcome.
Gents, thanks for having me back again.
Oh, it's our pleasure, and we get to spend some proper time with you today because it's the podcast.
I say we'll figure out in half an hour, 40 minutes, whether it was a big pleasure, true pleasure.
Hey, listen, we've had many a conversation off the record, and so we know very well that it's going to be a good one. But Chris, for the listening public that maybe, I mean, they've been under a rock for the rest of their lives, don't know you, don't know what Welsh's Transport do, just give us a quick picture, a snapshot of Welsh's Transport.
It's never quick. Oh, you know this.
Make it quick.
Right, so I'm Chris Welch. I'm Managing Director of Welsh's Transport, the Welch Group. We are heavily cemented in the good old-fashioned haulage world, logistics, as it's now termed. Fourth generation, so we've been doing it now for 91 years, started by my great-granddad. As you can imagine, in that much time, across the decades, across the generations, you end up doing all sorts of things. We do the standard stuff, warehousing, lots of lorries, lots of pallets. We also do some cranes. We do some heavy haulage. We can move anything from a parcel to a plane, mostly pallets in between, but all the P's. We're a Renault service dealer, so that'll come into our discussions later about understanding how these things run, the current ones and the future ones, which are actually the current ones already. 175 lovely local people. We're based around Cambridgeshire, Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire Way with three depots and everything in between. And apparently now we're seen as a bit of a lighthouse when it comes to decarbonisation, innovation and, as you say, collaboration.
Before we get into that interesting stuff, I'm fascinated, Chris. You mentioned in the passing that you get to carry everything from a parcel right through to a plane. What's the most head-scratchy thing that you've ever had to move? That you've had to go, oh no, how are we going to do that?
Let's attack that from two points, actually. So the most interesting head scratchy thing that I've moved, because I can drive, I have driven, not anymore, unless I have to. So I once moved a Spitfire from Imperial War Museum here in Duxford.
Wow.
With a Hiab trailer. So I took it apart. It was like a big Meccano set. I took it apart with the help of the engineers at the hangar, took the wings off, took the propeller off, managed to squeeze it onto a flatbed trailer, and I drove it down to Winston Churchill's War Museums in the centre of London.
Wow.
And then proceeded to put it back together with my crane. So that kind of gives you a taste of all the fun stuff happens, obviously, in our specialist moves division. I can't take away from the boys and girls that do the transport and the hard graft and the repairing and picking and packing. But unfortunately, the amazing team at our Specialist Movement Division do the fun stuff. I mean, if anyone follows our socials and bits and pieces, we moved a World War II plane again last week, three weekends ago, and that was the kind of move that involved shutting down parts of the A11, M11, because of the wingspan. and that move was actually 5 years in the making. Due to being ready, not being ready, clearance to run down the motorways, then then maintenance happens and it takes out a block of the motorway you were going to use for 6, 12, 18 months. So that took 4 to 5 years to sort out. And we eventually moved in. It was only going from Cambridgeshire down to Harwich or down to Felixstowe Docks. So all sorts of stuff. I can remember as a child. It's the nice local stuff as well. Like for many, many, many generations, there was a big Christmas tree that went up in the centre of Cambridge on the backs of the colleges. You know, and you drive on the backs of the colleges in Cambridge. They put a tree up there, and I think it's obviously sponsored by one of the local colleges. And it was a tree. Like it was probably imported from Canada or somewhere, and it was 100 feet tall. And we used to do that every year. There's all sorts of little things like that that's really nice. Another one that springs to mind is the Department of Chemistry in Middle of Cambridge, again, where we're based. There was a whale, full-size blue whale skeleton in one of their buildings, and they were refurbing it, and we literally had to lift this whale skeleton out the side of the building. They took the side of the building off to get it out. We took it away and brought it back a few weeks later when it was ready to go back in. All sorts of fun stuff. But again, I spend most of my day looking at pallets of garden furniture and cement posts.
Yeah. Wow.
It's super cool, isn't it? I
suppose a big part of it is, and again, we'll come on to my love of logistics and those kind of things. It's actually, I do a lot of work with colleges, and I was at a couple of colleges last week, and I did this thing for the local Form the Future group, which is a STEM breakoff, and it's called What's My Line? And the kids have to guess, like, yes or no, or a bit more answers. They've got to guess what you do. You walk into a room, no branding, just you. They've got to guess what you do from What's My Line. And you tell them that you're one of the biggest industries in the world. The biggest logistical firms are people like Amazon and things like that, DHL, and they're in virtually every country in the world. The biggest companies in the world are logistical firms. And they don't even... You walk into a secondary school early on and it's like, it's understandable, but I want to be a teacher, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a fireman, and now I want to be an influencer, as I found out when I was talking to him. it's just fun every day, isn't it?
Yeah. And Chris, what comes across just in our initial chat here, and obviously we know the wider context and the wider story, because you've got two streams seemingly running simultaneously. It does feel, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it does feel like the one stream sort of seems to facilitate or work in hand, or certainly in sympathy with the other, which is family and community, which is very important. You've mentioned about local, but also the decarbonisation of logistics. And you're already pioneering, genuinely pioneering, and have been for some time, which is why you're the inverted commas lighthouse, which I think is a lovely phrase, this whole transition. Talk to us about that balance and that connection between community and family, and also your day job.
It is my day job. That's what an managing director should do, shouldn't it? Lucky enough, I suppose, I'm no longer in the trenches. I haven't been there for a couple of decades. And now actually my job is to balance probably those three areas, the community, the people, and what is potentially most important to the future of this business, which is decarbonisation to the industry. How do I go about it? Oh, my word. By being me and smiling all the time? No. Where on earth do you begin with a question like that, Paul? Jesus. The first key to it is working in a family business. Like I say, fourth generation, it's a whole story in itself at the end of the day. I was never told that I would work here. It's not one of those family businesses. It isn't a job for the family. Obviously, I'm one of four. And in my generation now, I'm one of eight, I think, if I can count them all up in my head. I'm the eldest, so to be honest, if I wanted a crack at it, I had first dibs, which I did. But it isn't an environment. We didn't go to grand, as you can imagine, as you both have seen from our past dealings, it's all family orientated. Like I say, I work now with my dad, who looks after the group and is slowly retiring, slowly being the again, I couldn't do it without him, and we'll come on to that. And then my one of my younger brothers is in the business now. He's done his 2-3 years back to flooring, is now heading up our operations part of the business, trying to learn it and shape it like I did a number of years ago. But that's family, and the fact that there's three of us in and around the businesses is the foundation, the basis of that culture. It starts in that culture piece. Now, anyone, apart from right now, I've got my door shut, anyone can come and walk into my office, and it's all glass, as you guys know, so they can just wave at me anyway. You come and talk to us. It's those little things about making a point when you come in the morning, not go straight up to your office and go and sit in your big chair, go and wander around and go and talk to some people. I mean, I'll be doing well if I got around everyone every day, but I go and make myself available in certain areas, and that then resonates down to my senior management team and below. That everyone knows the remit, the unspoken rule of how you run and look after a family business. And you come then on the longevity piece, which is then where the local community comes into it. So when we're not a tier one, we're not up and down the country, apart from our lobbies being up and down the country. All our people are local people. I think my dad, when he was younger, after I was first born, made a conscious decision to move half an hour away from our closest depot, because having grown up in a house that was backed onto one of our original depots, and going down, and it's different culture back then, going down the pub after work and literally the whole workforce being in the pub is great, and we still do those kind of things. But I would also like to dread to think how much money was spent having to buy everyone drinks every evening. But you can't get away with it. And you said it earlier, didn't you, Paul, about the work-life balance. You have got to kind of get away from it, but it is integral in what we do. We support so many local charities. We support so many local groups. We do those little things like for the local schools, put the Christmas tree lights up on their little tree every year for free and just pop down there. We sponsor the fun runs. We sponsor the Soapbox Derby with a pace car. Can you be a pace car for Soapbox Derby? We are, if you can. It just becomes entwined in what you do. And again, I won't deny it. If you don't do that, then people don't respect you, and all your customers are local at the end of the day as well. So it's its own economy and its own circular environment, isn't it?
You have this quite wonderful family ethos, which clearly is one of the secrets of your success. But you've moved into this world of decarbonisation of your operations. Now, the easiest thing to do would be to tick all the boxes and say, yeah, we employ family and that's lovely, and we've got that lovely, friendly place to be, and we work with their community and we deliver stuff. That's what we do. And for most logistics companies, that is enough. But at Welch's, you've gone that stage further and you've said, no, there's more to this. We need to be cleaner in what we do, more efficient, more responsible. Why is that, Chris? Is that driven by you?
Yes, is the easy answer for that. No. my amazing team. It's the continuation of that story, I suppose, isn't it? It's the fact that we are multi-generational, we're family. I'm not in it to create a business and sell it and go and retire and buy an island. I'm in it for my children, potentially, and their children and the community beyond that. This is a place to work for local people, to have a good work-life balance, to have a nice environment to go home to and to come to work to. And again, if I'm being honest, which is part of the answer, to provide my family with a very comfortable way of life. And to protect that way of life and protect all my staff and the local communities and the jobs that we provide, you need to be looking forward, don't you? There's no point dwelling on the past or learn from the past, look at what's going on today, but it's what you've got to do next. And again, being blunt, as I've said to you guys before, it's commercial advantage. It's the gain that can be had by early adoption. And there's risks that go with it. But again, I'm in that very, very, very fortunate position where I have a very old company behind me, and my dad's tenure as well, quite happily say and tip my hat to him has been to take what my great-granddad and granddad had built. He built the Howding Company. He's a chartered accountant by trade, as I love telling everyone. And he made us ridiculously financially strong. Our balance sheet is something to be in awe of, if I'm being honest. And because of that, I can go on this crusade, a bit like back in the day with the knights, the crusade. They were backed by the church and that lovely gold and money. And I can go on my own little personal crusade and take my team and my company with me to demonstrate and case study what can be achieved now, because we've got to achieve it in the next 10 years, soon to be the 15 and 20 year mark.
And just to put some colour on that for people, when investing in new technology, the advice is often to lease, hire equipment to test it, to then be able to hand it back with the residual value back to the organisation. And you've paid some of the capital cost off, but you haven't invested a shed ton of money that an asset depreciates and you have sitting on your books.
Yeah.
However, Welch's do something very different. You use your own capital generated through hard work to fund the decarbonisation of your fleet. That's remarkable commitment.
We do it the old-fashioned way, John. And again, it's a testament to our heritage and generations before. We've always taken that stance. And that's why we've been around forever. And in certain parts of the industry, especially the middle part, we are quite highly regarded and we're a backbone of a lot of things. But a lot of people have never heard of us because we're not a tier one. We're not up and down the country. We haven't continued to grow. You think a company that's been going for 90 years would have 20, 30, 40 depots across the UK, probably into Europe, probably in Ireland. And that's actually part of the strategy, and it's the attitude that my dad took in the previous generation when he was consolidating what we were up to. And yeah, then that's allowed us to push forward on this decarbonisation journey. But yeah, no, we've always taken the attitude of owning everything, sites, assets, family members. we just own it because it de-risks it today. And I don't know how to explain it. It's safer. I mean, we could tender for work that's multi-million pounds in the future, but does it align with what we want to do? My dad has also ingrained into me that you don't want to operate anywhere that you can't drive like 45 minutes away to be at. I mean, again, back in the day for a history lesson, we were up and down the country post denationalisation. In the 50s and 60s, we had a dozen depots up and down the UK. There was no tier ones then, so it was all us family-owned operators. We ran the whole BHS, British Home Stores. We had the warehouse and we had the 100 lorries on it, and that was just part of the business, and that's how you did it back in the day. It gave my granddad multiple heart attacks, because if something goes wrong in Edinburgh at 2 o'clock in the morning, you drive to Edinburgh at 2 o'clock in the morning. And this is back in the day when you gave drivers a roll of 2p's to use a local phone box to drive during the traffic office when they're supposed to deliver it. So there's a lot more trust back in those days, as opposed to the 5 cameras, the 2 tracking modules, and everything else that we have of drivers nowadays. But to answer your question, John, yeah, it facilitates us to go on this journey, and we have, I won't deny that it's a very fortunate position to be in, and there's been lots of luck and lots of stars aligning, but I suppose there's an element of making your own luck in this world. But those very expensive assets that we are buying, we will continue to run far beyond the expected life, I should imagine, because again, we've learned. We come back to the fact that we've run an OEM truck centre since the 60s. We started at Bedfords, and we've gone through virtually every OEM there's been. My uncle, who is the engineer of the family, will tell you nothing's been the same since the ERF days. And that's why I've got 6 or 7 vintage ERFs in different states of decay, right to the bottom of the yard. But we know from our learnings of many, many, many years that it's the engines, it's the combustion piece that wears out on a vehicle. It's we already have a refurbished program for our trailers and for our rigids that do low mileage, and a trailer is a trailer at the end of the day. As long as it is sound and structurally intact, then you can keep using it. And after we run trailers for 12, 13, 14 years, and after seven, we'll spend a very good chunk of money sometimes shot blasting, rewelding new curtains, new floorboards. These things go through tires like no one's business anyway. But it's a bit like airplanes, isn't it? You look at airplanes and the fact that people don't always appreciate that these Boeing 747s that you go to on holiday on are probably 25, 30 years old, but they have certain components replaced by law. And it's the same as we've seen now in the bus world. So we've already got experience of refurbing the bits of the pieces on the vehicles, and then you connect that with what's happened in the bus world. You look at like first bus that are repowering buses now. We've seen electric drivetrains and batteries in operation now for over a decade, and they're still going strong. So there's no reason to doubt that they won't be that first rigid that we bought 2 years ago will not be going strong in another 10 years' time, because I think it will. And we will probably refurbish the rest of the husk, as we're going to call it. And you can change batteries out. We've experienced some battery swaps already. It's just going to keep going. So if you own it, the payoff will come, and then you're sitting pretty for the rest of the vehicle's life. Regardless,
and those lives are much longer these days, aren't they? So it's fascinating for me, because I've obviously had the joy and pleasure of being around your site in Duxford. I'm actually probably 3 or 4 miles, maybe 3 miles from your site here in Bedford, which I know. And you guys are not just thinking about the vehicles, and I think this is the key to it, because what we've seen is a lot of pushback from people that are trying to adopt electric trucks to say, oh, we can't charge them, or they won't go far enough, and all of these kinds of things. But you're doing a couple of things, both on that site there in Duxford, and considering the wider picture around both charging and also the ability for others to use your charging infrastructure. And it's so you're not only family, you're not only community, but you're the wider industry in that collaboration piece as well. Talk to us a little bit about how you're facilitating the wider adoption of electric trucks, particularly.
Places to plug in is the short of it. You're right. It's understanding your operation, it's understanding the industry, it's an understanding what you want to try and achieve. We took the decision that when we got that first electric rigid, that we were going to put 150 kilowatt supercharger in, which is actually, back 2 years ago, the biggest thing you could probably get reliably. And it was actually one of the first HCV superchargers to go in. It was definitely the first one the contractor had installed. Because we knew that if to run that asset, you need to sweat it, and we own it, so we want to have as many duty cycles in the day as we can get. We might not have achieved that, but we can facilitate it. And what that then means is all those other early adopters in the local area, because there's actually a lot of us in this local area, in East Anglia, can use it. And again, I've spoken to you chaps about this collaboration piece, and it comes back to the Transport Association. The 1955, they're 70 years old this year. And that's how the industry worked. Again, like I say, before tier ones, before certain operators were up and down the country, you worked with the 65 other hauliers that were your similar size across the UK. And we've worked together ever since. And there's all sorts of foundations that's built on, but one of them is sharing fuel. So again, over 90 years in operation, I can count on one hand the amount of years that we've run fuel cards, and that was for a dedicated contract that just was too far away from anyone's site. Again, the infrastructure problem to get back to low cost fuel. So for 70 years, we have daily a handful of vehicles will go into Transport Association members depots and refuel. So we bunker fuel in all three of our sites, and we sell at a very, very competitive price, cost plus, to our association members, and that again, when I come in, it's alien to some people, but when I started the industry and growing up around here, that's just how I thought things worked. It's what you're exposed to, isn't it? I just thought that's how, surely if you can buy fuel for 25, 30p less than you see at the pump, then why isn't everyone doing it? But it's the collaboration piece, and people don't even, and again, it works when you're big because you've got mobile depots and you can just send your fleet around to fuel at your own sites. But it's about working together. And that was the same attitude we took with the electric, because whatever the next source is, and a big part of it will be electric, you need to share it, don't you? And we know that planning and power is a big, big topic now going through into the next, well, it's now 5, 10, 15 years. And some people are going to be lucky and got it, and some people are going to be unlucky and not going to be able to get it. And whilst you can be mean, you need to help everyone out, don't you? Because what comes out of it is you don't know what comes out of it. And again, this is all being, a lot of this is being facilitated now by ZHIT. That really came about because of all these things we've been talking about who we are, what we do and why we do it. And it got us onto ZHIT at the end of the day. If we didn't have that attitude and that outlook for all the lovely things that you guys have been saying about us, then we probably wouldn't have gotten ZHIT, and we wouldn't be sitting right now talking about what we're talking about. It's about
absolutely. We take full responsibility for you getting ZHIT. Yeah, absolutely. But Chris, do you know what I think the unlucky people? Here's who I think the unlucky people are. The unlucky people are the people that have got everything that they need. For today, because they will be insular and focused. But what I'm loving at the moment, and I know that you're on with this journey also, is you haven't got enough to do what you want to do. So I know that you've got a big yard out the back there. There's a great big opportunity for, potentially a nice super hub, if you like, and a number of trucks that can come in and out, and you might get that. But you don't probably have the power connection, even if you do, just humor me for a minute.
Yeah.
Because I think that creating your own grid, your own power source, batteries, all of these kinds of things. Ultimately, today, yeah, they're a little bit, you've got to put a bit of money in, but you're not adverse to this. You know what this looks like. So you spend money today and you get that money back over 10 or 12 or 15 years because you are a family business. You are secure. Yep. You've got a good foundation. You can build out that. So you don't actually need the power. And I'm loving the fact that people have got to innovate to really fix this challenge. And I know that you're on that journey. And that's the bit that excites me. I really like the sound of that. Are you aware of this? Are you on with this?
Yeah, and that leads on to the innovation piece, doesn't it? That's just as exciting or even more exciting than putting lots of big, blue, shiny electric lorries on the road. And actually, having just looked out my window, we've just had a local hauler called Bartram's turn up in their electric Volvo. Just come to charge. So again, what I say in action, hopefully. Innovation, there's two points there. Coming back to the infrastructure piece, I mean, yeah, you start looking, and we all know, most of people will know Jamie, who works for me. And again, that's an example of what we try to do with individuals and why you should look at who you recruit and some amazing people that work for us. You start thinking and looking at things like microgrids. We've all got PV now, if you can. We've all done our scope twos. So everyone's got PV. Everyone has the opportunity, the exciting bit, to look into microgrids. And when we talk about this electrification, again, you guys are all over the LCV part of the world, and that's transitioning now and will always probably be electric, unless some nuclear cell comes out that never has to be recharged. You're going electric, because the cost modeling for anything else is horrendous. So big van fleets are going to be electric. Cars are therefore going to be electric, because again, they're ahead of the van. So any site, if you have a site that has parking and has staff, will have growing EV infrastructure for charging depending on what kind of fleet you operate, or even if you don't operate a fleet, if you're a business with lots of staff and lots of parking. And this, again, is what I say to people about. You think about Indeed. You think about which boxes you tick when you put an advert up about staff parties, pensions. There's going to be a box for EV. There probably is already. EV charging, is it free? Is it discounted? And it's going to become a perk for employees. We're looking at a salary sacrifice across the board EV scheme for all staff.
Yeah.
But the second half of that is, oh, my God, I'm going to have to put a lot more charging infrastructure in. Low voltage, luckily, but we're going to put it in. But you start looking at microgrids, and again, coming back to the pulling it back into logistics and from my operational hat on, we've never been able to control the price of diesel. You can hedge it, you can bunker it, you can buy when the market's low, but you can't control it. And now we're seeing that of HVO as well. Electric you can generate, and again, the smallest bit will help, because if you're okay, there's capital costs to these things, but the life longevity of this anything we buy nowadays is reasonably good. Not that the old generation will say that, but any free sun electric that comes off your fuel roof, or a bit of wind that you might have that you put into a battery, complete is 100% free at the end of the day. Really we can say that as an equation. And that 15 20 25 30 35p per kilowatt tariff that you're on is now getting topped up or reduced from that free electric, and then you get into grid trading, and then you get into energy arbitrage, and then you get into load balancing, and you get into V2X, and we could have a conversation about just on today about microgrids. And you do the calculation, do the maths. Again, we're doing this because it is inevitable, really. I mean, even if you think something else is going to come along in 10, 15 years, the life cycle of a vehicle, and we've discussed it, whether you chuck it back after 3 or whether you keep it for 10, is still a vehicle or 2 cycle away. So you're going to need to do it. So not getting yourself ingrained in this change that is not been the same since the invention of the combustion engine at the end of the day is horrifying in my eyes, and that comes back to why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, like I say, again, I've said this to you guys, gents, before, like, it wasn't until we were a year or so into this journey, and we're about 3 years into it now, and we stopped and had a look around, and we realized that we were at the front, one of the front of the pack.
Yeah.
We're like, well, this is just I don't know, I'm not going to be mean to everyone else, but this is just stupid in my eyes, because I know...
Well, you're future-proofing your business, aren't you? That's what you're doing.
Yeah, and I know I'm very lucky and very fortunate we've discussed those factors, but if you've got the ability to do something, then do it. Don't wait.
Let me pick up on that then. So here's a guy who clearly knows his stuff, has been in a business that has been started 90-odd years ago. You've learned the industry as you've grown, and you are in control of everything that happens in your business. We are taught as human beings that bigger is better, that growing is the thing that we should all be trying to achieve, and be as big as you can to have a huge scope and an opportunity to make change happen. And yet here you are, a man who's clearly at the forefront of our industry, almost content to say, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know what we do, and do you know what? Taking on Eddie Stobart is not my thing. Being Welch's and true to who I am is more important. Have I got that right?
Yeah. I'd always like a little bit more. But no, you're right. Because part of it comes back to that conversation. The reason we're having this conversation, what we said at the start, it's about, again, life, work-life balance. It's about community. It's about all these lovely people that work for us. If I could go hell for leather, and I could be one of these entrepreneurs that I go, okay, we're in the logistics industry. A standard day is 10 to 12 hours. Let's get that straight to begin with. But I could work 16 hours a day. I could go home and carry on and not see my wife and my kids grow up, and not mess about renovating my house. But what kind of life is that? Again, I understand why people do it, and I understand if you're in a different culture, in a different environment where you're building something to sell, then you go hell for leather for 5-10 years and you get it valued and you sell it. That is a model, and it's a proven model. But like you say, we're here just to carry on plodding away. And you again, like I said, a bit piece about our history. Everything is circular. Everything happens in waves. You look at the stock market, you look at economies, you look at where production is around the world. Like everything over the decades, over the centuries, just turns over and over. You'll grow and you'll contract naturally, regardless of what you are, who you are, how you're financed, what you do. So don't make it stressful for yourself. I mean, Dad rides me a little bit, and we share an office. He's usually sitting over there. Luckily, he's taking my kids to the zoo today. And again, family. But he said to me yesterday, I think he said, you've got far too much senior. You've got such your senior management team is far too big. Because I've got these lovely people that do all my work for me, and I'm like, well, maybe, but what that means is, A, I've got Jamie, who is probably more prominent than me in this decarbonisation space with what he knows and what we're doing, and he is our catalyst. I've got Matt, who's heading up my commercial. I've got Hayley, my amazing customer service manager, and all my different GMs. And yes, it makes my life easier. And yes, I will sacrifice profit to have a group of people around me that share my ethos and my vision and my values and our culture. But we all work there for an hour or two less a day, and we all go home happy, and we all have a life outside work. And whether we go out drinking and clubbing as we used to being the word there, it's just the way that I've built it and the way that I see it going. And coming back to the question about bigger is better, I think people now, smart people, again, I'm not doing anyone else a disrespect, but it's actually about efficiency. Like and that's why we talk about AI and data and things like that. It's efficiency. Like, you can always do more with what you've got. And that's the cycle that I've been going through. Like, so I've been here 10 years. I've been MD 1.5 now. I've been director 5 or 6. And I spent two, three years going back to floor, doing everything, driving everything, learning everything, getting a view on everything, people. and then I was handed responsibility site by site in poor performance order, shall we say. And I made it my own. My dad gave me the free rein to literally allow me to make even more mistakes, do what I want. Because from that point forward, it was on me. If I decided to get rid of certain customers because I thought they weren't profitable and it would ruin the P&L, which it did, and then you start rebuilding, and you've got to go through pain to get somewhere, and then you get into the sweet spot. And this industry is never a kind mistress, but you try and make a few pennies out of it by the end of the day, and you get to your sweet spot, and you build efficiency, and you build people in, and all of a sudden this year is our year of growth. 2025 is pure growth, and you're filling up that hole that we've created through improved efficiencies.
That's my question, Chris, to be honest. Do you ever have any time for self-doubt and that moment where you just go, oh, can I really do this? Can I keep it going? Or is it just inbuilt in you that this is going to be a success and I am right?
it comes back to one of, like, I was looking at the little, obviously you guys send out little hint questions, don't you, before this, just in case we get stuck. I don't, like, from watching them, you never get stuck. But there was one about, like, where is it? I made a few notes about, like, what advice would you give your teenage self and, like, your inner person? And I actually put down the word grit. Like, if I could talk to myself, and again, people talk about their journeys and bits and pieces. I wasn't the smartest growing up. I was in learning support when I was in secondary school. I had a tutor outside of primary secondary school because I couldn't read and write properly. Very good at maths, thank God, because now I run a company. But that's why I talk to a lot of young people. You don't know, you don't, people, they, you can't explain to them how your life changes and what is around the corner, how much luck plays. And actually, anyone can do anything. And people look at people in their ivory tower, or on their pedestal. And what I've learned over the last 2 decades, and very much in the last 5 to 6 years, being in more higher circles, shall we say, strange circles, not this circle, is that at the end of the day, people are people. Everyone is a person. There's no difference in any of us. And coming back to your point there, I learned a long time ago, and I've been managing people for 15 plus years now. If you say something with conviction, most of the time they follow. No, I mean, that's not disrespect to my staff, but some people just need to be told, and you need to say it with conviction, and then when you say something with conviction, you believe it yourself. And vice versa, you believe it yourself, you say it with conviction. Yeah. And I'm also one of those people that listens to a few of those podcasts that talk about just a positive mental attitude. Like that's why I always smile. You can't get, and that's the other thing I wrote down to talk to my younger self about. I said, don't sweat the small stuff. I mean, things happen, especially in this industry. You will have to fire people. Accidents will happen. Problems will occur. Vehicles will break down. Customers will be annoyed. But don't worry about it to a certain extent. Smile on it. At the end of the day, smile. And also think good. Like, if something's going wrong, good. Because, again, we come back to this evolution part, this continue to strive forward part, continue to improve yourself part. Nothing goes wrong, and you're in that sweet spot that you guys mentioned earlier. How are you ever going to get better? How are you ever going to improve? When something goes wrong, good. Exactly. Because you've got to do something about it. Good. Just keep saying good. That's all I say to them.
So Chris, we like to get, you talked about grit, and you talked about when things go wrong, good. And this can be either in the business world or before you hit, Welch's Transport as a, an employee. When have you had to sort of really dig deep? Because I'd be forgiven for thinking, multi-generational, profitable business for many years. You've grown up with silver spoon. And we've already heard that actually probably not. School would have been a bit tough, at times. But you've come through that. You've learned a lot from that. What was that toughest moment in your life so far, and what did it teach you? And I kind of get a sense of how it really influences you today, but go for it.
The toughest part was probably 5 years into working here. I'd been back to the floor. I'd now, in my eyes, had a better understanding than our current MD, my dad, of how it all works and what was wrong and what was right and how it should. And I was know it all. I was, what was I back then? Early 30s, late 20s. And I was naive in thinking how you could fix things quickly. So I thought it was do ABC, that would work. We need to do this. P&L would turn around. We'll just go from there. Easy peasy. And it wasn't. We had some big problems. Everyone goes through big problems. This is operationally. And then you add on that piece where you're having to deal with a family member, and your dad. One of the questions was here is who's your biggest idol, which is my dad, and biggest influencer. Oh. And you're sitting in front of someone trying to explain yourself, and he's trying to explain yourself, and what happened was it was the point where we learnt where we both sit and how we learnt what each other know, and we learnt it what each other were good at, and we understood each other's position. And I also learnt that there isn't a magic wand, and it was going bad and it got worse through things that I was doing, and it wasn't for a long time that it then started to get better from a performance point of view, and from my not mental health, it wasn't that bad, but like literally you would start, and I might do it in a minute, you would start, I would sit there in front of his desk, and have conversations about what was happening and what was going on, and you would find yourself welling up, because at the end of the day, as I said, this isn't a job for the family. I committed myself to this place. I went into industry. I used to work for like DHL bits and pieces. I did 10, 12 years in industry to establish that I wanted to work in supply chain. I wanted to work in logistics. And by working in this company, gave me the stepping stone to do actually what I like, to a certain extent. I've got to run lorries, but I can do what I like. And that's, again, coming back to your guys' questions about why we're doing decarbonisation, why we're innovating, why we're doing what we're doing, because that's what I get kicks out of, as well as looking after all my lovely people. But what it did was gave me that grit. It gave me that realisation. It gave me that, it hardened me, I suppose, to understand how the business world works, and at the same time having to have very difficult and honest conversations with the man that has looked after me all my life at the end of the day. So that's where that grit, where that don't sweat the small stuff, because when you've done it, you come out the other side, you reflect, you look back on it, and again there is merit in looking back on what's happened before, especially to yourself. And yeah, that's where that quick determination and then this smiley face has come from, because at that point I understood, I got it. And then you connect that with that thing about people being people, and no one's better than anyone else. And you connect all those other little dots together, and you meet great people like yourselves, and you find what you're good at. I don't know, I'm still trying to find that. And yeah, that probably packages it up. That was the hardest point.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, that it's actually moved me. We won't go into why, but it's amazing to be able to go on a journey in that sort of world with a family member, your dad. It's kind of how life should be, and so often isn't. But life giving you a wonderful mentor, a wonderful father, and a man that was willing to give you the opportunity and give you a bit of rope, but then when he needed to, he's pulled that rope back in a beautiful way and created the wonderful man that we see before us. And I'm very privileged. No, but genuinely privileged to see and hear the way that it seems to run through you. Now, you know, God forbid, we're never going to hear from somebody that's, oh, that bloody Chris Welsh, you know, he's nice on the camera, but yeah, we know what he's like in private, all those parties and drinking. But it does run through you, and we get the sense of that. This is multi-generational. It is, I'm really encouraged. And I would love for us to be able to build more companies like this. Do you know what I mean? Community-based, set parameters. We're not wanting to dominate the world. We want to make a difference right where we are. We want to make a difference in the future of transport. We want to make a difference in our community, and we want to be good to our family. That is valuable. And that's how the world grew, you know, little communities of, you know, numbers of people. It's quite cool, isn't it, John? It's a pretty cool thing.
Do you know what? The thing I love about Chris, and I've always loved about Chris, is leadership. As a human being, there's an instinctive feeling that he knows where he's going. He knows how he's going to get there. It's not going to be easy, but he's going to take you on a journey. And there's a level of trust that you build through people.
And you can watch it all unfold on LinkedIn.
This is true.
Nah. Magnificent, mate.
Now, Chris, you said something utterly wrong a minute ago.
Go on.
I'm sorry, I've got to take you to task because, you know, denying the reality of magic wands is just a step too far. This is a magic wand, even with its little lightning bolt. And the magic wand comes out when we want to give somebody one wish. So that you said there's no magic wand. Well, Now you have an opportunity. Hang on, just come back here towards the camera because you've got to take the magic wand. Right, ready? Here we go. There it is. It's coming to you. Oh. There we go. Brilliant. That's it. Right. So you now hold the magic wand. It's always good. Tell us what one thing, industry, family, community. I suspect somehow it's going to meet all three. What would you do? What would you do for us?
Jesus, you could have asked this one to be prepped, couldn't you?
No.
One wish is probably. I'm not doing this alone because I have amazing people like we discussed that work for me. I would like a wish to be that there would be a lot more operators on this journey alongside me. That's really. Get home the fact that this needs to happen. It needs to happen now, and let's open invitation to other operators to come on this journey with me. I would love for there to be. I've already got a few that I can ring up and talk to, but again, it's about that King Arthur's Round Table, the Knights of the Round Table that I have that work for me. This journey is easier when more people do it. So my wish is that there is more of me. In this country, in this world, doing what we're trying to do, because it'll make it easier, there'll be more shared infrastructure, there'll be more economies of scale, there'll be more customers that can't deny the fact that they need to take these services. There wouldn't be as many people that are there to undercut you just doing the old fashioned way. More people like me.
On the same journey as you, I think. We don't want many more Christians. That's right. Yeah. But you said it, didn't you? The journey is made easier when more people do it. And I think many hands make light work, right? Yeah. And I asked Justin Laney, for those of anybody that doesn't know who Justin Laney is, he's head of sort of director of transport for the John Lewis partnership. So a big job and a very reputable guy. But I asked him at a conference recently, you know, does charger sharing make a difference? And he said, it's a game changer. You know, what we're seeing in action here is, you know, relatively, you know, John Lewis Partnership and Welch's Group, it's sort of slightly different size. But you're an important cog in the big picture. And what we need is lots of cogs in order to make it all happen. John, This has been a great conversation, and it kind of feels like one that we can have much more of. but for the sake of our listeners and letting them get back to whatever they're doing, because I'm sure they've come on the journey with us, summarize this for us, mate. This is awesome.
All I can say is that I first heard of Welch's Transport about 18 months ago. I'd never heard of them. And I met two of Chris's people at a conference, and we spoke, and they were different, but with the same message as Chris has talked about today. They live and breathe Welch's Transport. They understand where they're going. They know that they're not alone. They know there's support, and they will get there. It ain't going to be easy, but they are going to get there. And they are the biggest credit to you, Chris, that I can possibly say. And I didn't have the joy of knowing you at that point. But my goodness, I'm glad I do now. They are a credit to you, and you are a force of nature. And genuinely, the world does need more of your kind of thinking and the way in which you go about your business and your life.
Oh, no, thanks, guys. No, I appreciate that. Like I say, yeah. It's the same as your kid, isn't it? Like, again, one of the answers that I had to one of those questions is tell me one of your biggest, brightest moments. And I actually put down my eldest's first parents' evening. Because it's a credit to you, isn't it? Like, at your staff, your children are a reflection of you. And you get feedback like that, which is amazing, or feedback from a teacher about your lovely child that's not the same child at home, and yeah, it makes it all worthwhile. But so thanks,
it does.
Thank you,
Chris. We've probably not talked enough about your family, but I know that you're a wonderful family man. You've given them a lot of credit as the time has gone by, and you know, from a family perspective. It's been a joy to kind of sense that foundation in family, in community, but they're doing business and leading a business. Not only leading a business, but leading the industry. You know, we haven't touched on today Palette Line and the influence that you have in there. You are genuinely a lighthouse. You're putting out a lot of information. I would encourage anybody to connect with Welch's Transport, both from a LinkedIn point of view, or, you know, all of your socials. Check in with Chris and follow Chris, but also Jamie Sands is worth calling out, because, you know, he's on that mission with you and really supportive with you. And I know, you know, as you've mentioned, the great team around you are so, so important. And it's great to see the new truck today. So anybody, you know, this is today, probably a few weeks before this comes out. But we've also got, might be before, it might just be just after, the commercial vehicle show, which we've got coming up, and you're going to be sharing on stage with us there, which is amazing. So keep shining that light, mate. Keep being that lighthouse, that beacon, both internally to your community and to your family and to your business, but also to the wider industry. You're doing a fantastic job. Thank you.
Thank you, Jess. No, I definitely will. It's been a pleasure digging into it all. It's very often, it's not very often you actually properly sit down, dig into it, reflect, and come out smiling.
Well, and you should be smiling from ear to ear, as you are. So everybody, listen, do check back on the video. You can see that on YouTube, but also you can hear it on Spotify and Apple. Also connect with us on, you know, to our website, to our socials, LinkedIn and YouTube, and follow us. And please leave a review if you've liked this, you enjoyed this conversation. Give us a review and let us know what you think in comments or different things like that, because we love hearing from you. And it'll encourage Chris as well, you know, to hear how good things are going for him. So thanks, everybody. And thank you, Chris Welch and Welch's Transport. Do check them out. Do follow them and everybody else within that business. And John, thanks ever so much for your company, as always.
An absolute pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great day, everybody. And we look forward to checking back with you soon.